This podcast brought to you by Hope 103.2.
Have you ever wanted to just pack up your life and head overseas and start again in a whole new location? Well, that's exactly what Jane Paik did. She packed up the family and moved to Paris. And she's now written a book about the experience called A Family in Paris, Stories of Food, Life and Adventure. Hi, Jane.
Hi, Katrina.
What took you to Paris?
My husband came home one day and said, how would you like to go and live in Paris for 2 years? So he'd been asked at work whether he'd like to transfer to head office there. He works for an international wine and spirits company.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the decision was made in a flash.
You just put your hand up and said, yes, please.
Yes, that's right. that word Paris sort of just, you know.
Yeah, isn't it? It's powerful. And so how did your children respond to the idea of moving to the other side of the world when you first talked to them about the idea?
Well, they were quite young at the time. They were 4 and 8.
Mm-hmm.
But they were sort of used to being bundled up and travelling around.
Okay.
We previously lived in New York for 3.5 years. And my eldest, Georgie, was 1 when we went to New York and 3.5 when we came back.
Mm.
And Annabelle was actually born in New York.
So they already had kind of had a taste of moving around and probably weren't too rooted in one place. What stood out to you the most when you first arrived in Paris?
Oh, look, I mean, the first weeks in Paris were just wonderful because I guess, you know, you're really in the mindset of a tourist.
Mm.
And we arrived in April and, you know, all the flowers are out in the parks and everyone's out and about and it's sunny. And we just had a wonderful time, you know, climbing the Eiffel Tower and going to Notre Dame and the boats down the river and all the things you would do as a tourist. So we just thought, oh, this is going to be a wonderful extended holiday for a couple of years.
Well, one of my strongest memories of France is trying to buy Panadol from a pharmacy. Despite all the headache gestures, et cetera, we just could not get through. I was wondering, in the early days, did you have problems communicating?
Oh, every day I was making terrible faux pas. You know, it became hard even just to go to the boulangerie and get across what you wanted. I mean, there's just so many different varieties of bread and so many options.
Mm.
Yes, so it's all those everyday things were quite difficult to start with.
Did you have any French when you went? Or?
No, had no French at all. Yes.
And I take it you would be fluent now?
Bit rusty now, yes.
Okay.
But it did take me a while. I'm not really a natural at languages, I discovered. And also age as well has something to do with it, I think.
But, of course.
Yes, the girls, of course, were thrown in and picked it up, although it is a difficult language and it did take them quite a while as well.
Well, I was going to ask, how long did it take them to really sort of grasp the language and settle in at school and that kind of thing?
I'd say a good 2 years.
Really?
Yes.
That must have been hard on them.
It was. The education system over there is extremely different from the Australian education system.
Mm-hmm.
For Annabelle, the youngest, she was quite fine because she had no, you know, preconceived ideas of what school should be. But Georgie, who was 8, had a really tough time to start with.
So how is it different, Jane?
It's very rigid and disciplined education system. We would call it, you know, very old-fashioned, almost going back to the 40s or 50s in Australia.
Mm.
So you've got the very small classrooms and, you know, the desks lined in rows. Well, fun and education, for example, would never be used in the same sentence. You're there to learn.
Mm.
And most of the week is really about learning French and the intricacies of the French language and maths. So sport was once a month. There was no art or music room, no library.
No, that sounds dreadful.
No playground.
No playground?
No.
So
we
did
were very lucky, though, because the school was next to a beautiful park, so they were able to have recess and lunchtime in that public park, although they weren't allowed to, you know, sit on the grass or use the public playground because they were part of the school. So they were actually, each class was designated to play between two lampposts on the central path. So they had to stay in that on that road, really, for the whole of their lunchtime.
So yeah, it sounds like they kind of expect the kids to be mini adults.
Yes, well, the focus really is on turning out intellectuals. And the broader education really is for the parents. So that's the way they look at it. You know, to get into one of these Grandes Écoles, which are the very prestigious universities in Paris, is everything. And if you get into one of those, you're assured a bright future. So that's what it's all about. It's preparation for the French baccalaureate.
Wow, it's amazing. Now tell us also about the kids' birthday parties in Paris, because they're just a little different to your typical kids' birthday party in Australia.
Oh, that's right. I guess birthday parties in Australia, it's, you know, the food's a focus and lots of games, and it's usually the parents that do the egg and spoon races and pass the pass and all that kind of mm-hmm. thing. So we actually did that in our apartment the first year we were there. And halfway through the party, we'd exhausted all of the games, and all these kids were like, you know, tugging on our clothes, saying, well, when's the clown coming? When's the entertainment coming? And they're so used to being spoon-fed entertainment, I guess, that this was a really novel idea to them. And, yeah, so that was a bit of a disaster of a birthday party, and we soon learnt that other years that you had to have a bit more professional entertainment.
Wow. That's just so foreign. I'm speaking to Jane Paik. She's the author of A Family in Paris, Stories of Food, Life and Adventure. It sounds very romantic, but what were some of the hardest things about moving your family to the other side of the world?
I think because we were two Australians with no, or very little language skills, that was the hardest. I guess if you had one French partner or a fluent French speaker, it would be easier. But even things like just setting up the apartment was quite difficult. Apartments, when you rent them over there, sometimes you're lucky enough to have it fitted out with a kitchen, and other times you're not.
Really? No yes. kitchen?
No, even if you're renting, yes.
Wow.
So our apartment, of course, had, you know, was stark naked with nothing. So just that process of trying to fit out a kitchen, really with a pocket dictionary, not having any idea what you were doing, that was very difficult.
And how did the French women treat you? Because I remember reading Sarah Turnbull's Almost French, and she said that the French women were very unfriendly and viewed any other woman really as competition.
Competition. I think that's right, actually. I mean, it's just a very formal sort of closed society, and friendships just age really slowly. You know, like a bottle of good Bordeaux, it's like, well, you have to really earn that friendship, and takes a while to get, you know, get that trust. So a little bit wary of strangers, and yes, especially other women. So that was quite difficult too. So you inevitably gravitate towards the international community, because you I mean, you've lost the support of your family and your friends when you move somewhere, and a lot of the expats, the husbands do travel a lot, so you really do find yourself a bit isolated at times. So you really need the support of other women, and that, you know, you couldn't really get that easily from the French women.
So how would a French woman respond if, you know, you're picking up your kids from school and you said, oh, let's, you know, go to the park and take the kids for a play, or let's have a coffee? How would they respond to that?
I don't think it wouldn't happen probably for a little while until you really got to know them very well.
Okay. Well, how can you get to know someone, though, if you can't?
This was the chicken and the egg scenario, yes.
Now, let's talk about the kids. The time that you had there in Paris must have had a big influence on your children. Are they more French or Australian now?
Oh, look, I think wherever you are, you're influenced by your environment, so they're probably more Australian now. But there's certain things that you know, will influence them forever, I think. Georgie really loves to dress up, and, you know, any opportunity to dress up and go out, she loves. And she just can't understand how, you know, kids can go to uni in their tracksuits here, or, you know, she's just appalled at that.
Oh, really?
Annabelle just loves languages, and she was very, you know, the natural in our family, really, at languages, probably because
she was so young.
There at such a young age. So she's been learning Spanish and Italian, and has recently gone on an Italian exchange. So for her, she'll always have that link with Europe, I think. She's a real, you know, just loves Europe and loves France. But apart from that, I think you just maybe look at the world differently. You know, they're probably a bit more open-minded, globally minded, and you know, your whole perception of the world changes, really, and of yourself.
And so now that you're back, what are some of the things that you have trouble coping with about Australia? Like, what do you miss about Paris?
The cheese. I think what I miss most is, it's quite hard to put into words, but they've just perfected the art of living well. I mean, there's this, you know, this culture of elegance and beauty that extends to every corner of life. So there is beauty everywhere, quality, good taste and style. It's like just infused into the everyday.
Doesn't that sort of come with a bit of pressure, though?
It does. It's quite high maintenance.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, it makes your day. If you've had a bad day and you're walking around the streets and it's just this blur of beauty wherever you go. And everybody makes an effort, I think. I mean, even in the markets, you know, it's like going to the theatre every day, down to the open-air produce markets, and, you know, even the beans are beautifully lined up in their crate and then put into a quilt pattern, or,
yes,
you know, the clementines are all built up into a perfect pyramid. So they do, you know, take that extra time and put that extra effort in.
Yeah, and that's one of the things, I guess, that your book kind of really displays through the photography, is just the beauty of ordinary things, like you said, a bowl of beans, or, you know, perhaps even the traffic on the street, or, you know, a man selling meat or something
right.
like that.
And the paper bags that you get from the boulangerie if you, you know, go and buy a croissant or a tart or something, it's always going to be, you know, in a beautiful box and, you know, with a ribbon, or you know, flowers printed on the paper bags. So everything, you know, every detail is thought about.
Mm. Okay. Well, look, it's been lovely to talk to you. The book is absolutely beautiful. I mean, it really is. I think there's a lot of reading. It's also a coffee table book. It's also a book you can flick through, isn't it?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Penguin have done a wonderful job with the design. Yes, and it's really a gift book as well.
Yeah. So, all right, lovely to talk to you, and thanks for sharing a little bit of your story, what it's like to pack up a family and move overseas.
Thanks, Katrina.
That's Jane Paik. She's the author of A Family in Paris, Stories of Food, Life and Adventure.
This has been a Hope 103.2 podcast. For helpful articles, station news, videos, devotional emails and more podcasts, visit hope1032.com.au.